Welcome, everybody, to the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you with us. Joining us right now, Don.
Good day.
Ava.
Hey.
And me, myself and I. That's three. That's five of us in here, and it's an awful crowded room, that's for sure. Well, inside my head it is. But that's another story, but we've got a lot of cool stories coming up today. We've got, this one shocked me. There is a tree, apparently, that if we grow it, could help trout in the state of Minnesota, which is kind of funny. A little story about Devil's Lake coming up. And rough grouse numbers. Talk a little about rough grouse.
Okay.
Cool. Stay tuned for that.
Season's coming up.
Yeah, it is. Stay tuned for that and more when we return. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference. Hey, Donald.
Good day.
Ava.
Hey.
So, you and I.
Yes.
We're really not here. Because we taped the show early.
We had to do it early.
Because right now we're actually sitting, I'm hoping we're having coffee on a deck overlooking Ash River right now.
I am sure we are.
That would be, this is.
I know
this
we're not here.
This is kind of a crazy, so this is a time conundrum.
Yes.
This is strange.
Yeah. It's hopefully very, we will have found a lot of fish by this time.
Because I'm gonna turn the show on my phone, and then we're gonna be drinking coffee and listening to us talking about
Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Hopefully we're out a little bit. Would be yesterday, which would have been Friday, and yes. We were catching fish. Hopefully we did a little bit. It's gonna be probably scouting a lot, is my guess. I've got some insights. Sounding like we're going to be doing some deeper jigging wrap and shiver minnows and ripping wraps, which is my forte. I love that more than anything. And using electronics to find those fish is just something else. You find them, you mark them, and then you stay on them, and they just, it's like, yep.
You put the old spot lock on and throw a few cast out.
Yep, exactly. And if it's on a reef, it's really kind of fun. Because then you set off of the reef and cast to them with the wind, the boat
to your back.
The wind, you cast it to the back and you can pinpoint those fish. And it's a really good teaching experience too, because you can see you're dialed in electronics wise. There's the fish. You turn into the wind, you drive up casting distance, you hit spot lock, you lock it in. 12 o'clock is going to be straight back. And then you start working back to 10 o'clock casting right back to 12. And then the other person's working at 2 o'clock back to 12 or 3 o'clock back to 12, and you work it, and then you figure out where the fish were hitting. Were the fish hitting at 1 o'clock? Were they fishing, you know, getting them at 2? Were they 11? Where were they? And then you can simply move the boat over and get it in a different angle to get those fish.
I always said they don't bite till after 10 o'clock.
Donald, work with me. Ava,
that
it's going to be a long.
He's talking about fan casting.
Long week. Ava.
It's going to be a long show.
It's going to be a long show. And you know it's going to be longer because it's actually not today. It's actually 2 days from now.
All right, Eric.
Yeah.
We're confusing everybody now.
I'm confusing myself, but that's all good. That's all good. So anyway, tip of the week this week was one of the things that's last weekend I went out and I was experimenting. I was going for panfish and I thought, you know what? I'm going to bring three different baits. I'm going to bring crawlers, worms, and wax worms. So regular like leaf worms, night crawler, and then the little wax worm.
Okay.
Or sunfish, I thought.
Sure.
They love those.
They do.
So I went out. I started out with worms. I mean, it was game over. Okay, they're here. I throw a wax worm on. The bobber kind of bounced a little bit, and then stopped. I reel it in. Gone.
Wax worm's gone.
Right back up. Feed it on. Bounce it. stopped, gone. Then I left it. They pulled it down, and then they wouldn't take it. Went back to a worm. Bloop, down, get the fish. That was a light went off in my mind. Bait is super important, and it always has been. But to that detail, you wouldn't think live bait with a waxworm and a sunfish? Come on.
They usually attack them.
I thought walleye would be the picky one.
Right.
But, you know, we're getting 9.5-inch sunfish are just monsters. But yet you still look at that and you say, how important is that live bait? Whether it's minnows, doesn't matter. If you're catching walleye and you want to get bigger ones, you're going to use, in the river, you're going to use willow cats, or you're going to use creek chubs. Whatever it might be, it's amazing how much difference the bait can make. And it was, it was about as fast a response as you could get. One time it worked. Next bait doesn't work. Throw it back on again. Yep, it works. So that was one of those experiences that you don't forget, or it constantly reminds you of how important that is. So
especially fresh bait.
When you're going out, make sure that you have that. The night crawlers, they work, but not as much.
They weren't that interested?
No, it's interesting. I think a lot of it had to do with the worm ends were kind of moving around.
Sure.
They were on top of that like nothing. So was an interesting observation. I used a little white jig and a pink head too, but what do you do?
Interesting.
Yeah, they don't want anything to do with just that. So, oh well. It is what it is, which is good. There is a video you guys have to check out. It's not on our page, but I saw it and it was terrifying, honestly. It was from South Africa, and this gentleman, he's a guide, and he was out having breakfast or in his house. He's grabbing a cup of coffee, and outside his kitchen window, a large, very large lion was not happy with him and let him know. It was freaky. Because the size of that lion, if you wanted to come through the door that was there, I think he could have done it pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But it was a terrifying deal. I mean, I'm looking at it going, nah, no. There was a little bit of speed involved, and there's a lot of muscle in that lion. And I thought, this is something else. So you got to pull it up on YouTube. It has to be Lion Stares and Growls at a Nature Guide from Outside the Kitchen Window. So it's pretty, just punch it in. You'll find it. It's definitely one of those what not to do in nature, go out the door at that particular point in time.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't.
Stay where you're at.
What's your favorite animal of all time?
Of all time? Mm-hmm. Koala bear is pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about you, Don?
Oh, boy.
Depends on to hunt or...
Just your favorite animal.
Probably it was my dog.
Oh.
My hunting dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say black labs. I mean, that's what black labs are.
I had short hair, and she was my buddy. I mean, we spent a lot of time in the field together, and the guys that do that know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the reason why I ask is lions are my favorite.
Oh, girl.
Well, why did I guess that there was something involved in that question? There's something behind it.
Yes.
There's always a plot.
Uh-huh. It thickened just then. Stay tuned. It'll be even more thick when we return. Hi, everybody. Ava decided to turn up my volume and play the music, and we're all good now, right?
You know, everything is Don Cleaver's fault.
Jeez. It's a good thing I'm here.
If you guys only knew what goes on
out
there.
You should see what happens when you're not here.
Yeah.
It runs rather smoothly, actually.
Yeah, I don't think I screw up the music or anything. And Don Cleaver's gone.
Yeah, Ava got a little twisted here a bit ago.
It is. Yeah, we're good. Obviously, we want to make sure you guys check us out on Facebook. We'll be sending a lot of photos and putting a lot of photos up there from the trip as we go through up on Ash River, Ashkenham Resort.
Are you going to have like a fishing contest between all the attendees? Or
you think we ain't?
Oh, yeah, we're going to have lots of fun.
I got lots of lots of cool giveaway stuff. So it'll be fun. Mountain Dew and Rapala and yeah.
They're going to have to earn it, though.
We don't just give it away.
No.
We must earn it.
You're going to earn it. So.
Yep. So, yeah, anyway, check us out on Facebook. Check us out on our website, thevalleyoutdoors.com, where we are streaming and all sorts of other stuff. We got the cool stories on there. We got video on there. We've got all the links on there. And you can check out the resort that where we're going to be at, which is a really cool place. And I haven't been there for a long time, but I know it is going to be very cool.
Yep. Judd and Michelle run it, and it's a really nice facility.
Cool. We're excited.
Yep.
So
I'd
like to thank those guys. What a great opportunity. So speaking of a story that I teased earlier, could saving a state tree help fix trout fishing troubles? This is out of Pennsylvania, but it could apply here. In one of the vice presidents of Trout Unlimited South Central Region, this gentleman, Russ Collins, he said he wonders whether struggling tree species could ultimately endanger one of the top fishing grounds in the country, if not the world. He sees firsthand how an iconic hemlock, which is Pennsylvania's state tree, is under siege and is dying off. A stand of hemlocks in his backyard is all but gone despite efforts to combat the invasive woolly adelgid? The adelgid bug. I know everything about that. How about you guys? Never heard of it. That slowly sucks the life from them. And, of course, it slowly sucked the life out of the radio show here, too, as well. A stand of hemlocks in his backyard is all but gone. So, and that's that bug that did that. He points to a two-mile stretch of the water in where he lives, where the hemlocks are dying off every 40 feet or so. It's gotten so bad that the falling giant trees have jammed up a section of the creek.
Ah.
If they continue to die like they're dying, the water will continue to warm, he said, and the fickle trout habitat will shrink. There's a direct correlation between hemlock and native trout, which is a species highly sensitive to water pollutants, stream erosion, and warming temperatures. The situation is particularly crucial in Pennsylvania, which has more miles of stream than any state in the lower 48.
I did not know that.
No, you're here for an education, Don.
Yes.
I'm here to provide it. Right, Ava?
That's what we're all here for.
The state's known and renowned for its fly fishing and trout. The hemlocks are one of the great protectors of their waters. The towering trees that often live for hundreds of years create their own ecosystems. Certain kinds of animal life, like warblers, salamanders, as well as insects and plants, depend on them. Deer and others bed down under them in the warmth in winter to stay cool in the summer. Hemlocks often reside along streams, and their vast root systems help stabilize the water levels and prevent erosion. Their thick evergreen branches provide unparalleled cool shade the native trout require for waters, and the temperatures don't rise above the low 60s that help the trout spawn and thrive. They also eat insects and that eat the hemlock needles that fall into the stream. When the hemlocks die, there's nothing substantial to take their place in short order. Even optimum native options such as red maple and yellow birch take years to grow large enough to provide similar benefits. There's a race underway to, even if it's slow and a deliberate one, ensure the hemlocks don't go the way of the American chestnut, elm, and ash trees, which has happened here as well.
Right.
We've seen those go away. So they're attempting to get rid of the woolly adelgid bugs that have been killing hemlocks for the last 50 years, from Georgia through the New York or in New England states. That is a rice-sized insect native to Asia. They have no natural enemies and have helped kill more than 10 million hemlocks in Pennsylvania alone.
Do we have a lot of hemlocks in the Midwest?
Mm-mm. Nope. They've been found in 64 of the state's 67 counties. That's in Pennsylvania. The mortality rates only increased since the 90s, boosted by the warmer winters that encouraged the adelgid to flourish. So, yeah, bad deal. I think it's really a telltale how the ecosystem is so stair-stepped with each. You miss a stair.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to get back up.
Nature works in pretty interesting ways.
So it's at this particular point, the environmentalists are pointing to a promise, at least as far as slowing down the insects' march. Best practices include pesticide, biocontrols like flies and beetles that eat the adelgids, and breeding programs focused on increasing pest resistance, similar to efforts to bring back American chestnuts. They've established a hemlock conservation plan that identifies significant infestation and focused treatments. Of course, fishermen hope this is enough to save one of the state's biggest attractions. And one of the guides in the area believes the tree's decline in relationship to the trout streams is not at a critical stage in most places, at least not yet. So there is hope. Keep attacking how we should get capping that bug. We should get ahead of the game. And, of course, if nothing's done, we're going to get into trouble with that. So that's not a good thing at all, in my mind.
Of course not.
No. So, you know, tell you what, Ava, should we take a break?
We can do that.
Let's take a break, because I've got a story coming up talking about Devil's Lake that I really want to get ahead of, and it's a little bit of time on that one, as well as some numbers of steelhead trout that are going into the Columbia River. It's kind of an alarming deal. So stay tuned. We got some cool stories coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa.
So as I previously had teased, Devil's Lake. Have you ever fished Devil's Lake?
I have not. It's on my list.
That is an ever-evolving fishery.
Yeah.
If you haven't been to Devil's Lake, so this is really kind of the thought process on Devil's Lake. What they did is they opened it up and they actually started filling Devil's Lake. It was, or I shouldn't say started to, the water just kept coming and didn't have a natural outlet. Everybody said it would at a certain point. Well, we started going back, or going to there for the walleye tour event back in 01, 02. And
20 years ago.
A swamp. There was fresh cattails from the year before. It was in 19 feet of water. So the water came up. We were fishing in farmers' barns. The radar dishes, I caught a wall, 2-pound walleye underneath the guy's big, you know, those big radar or TV dish, you know?
Sure.
A bunch of white freight laners. I lost a bunch of lead core on a manure spreader. And you wonder how I
that would catch them.
Yeah. Oh, it stops them all at once. You think you get four on. Well, that's right. I did.
Get it up or what?
No, it was bad. It was a little bit on the firm side, shall we say, anchored to the bottom. And that was. Yeah, that's one of the experiences that you have. But also, so then you look on the habitat side, the number of trees that were flooded. And you were fishing in trees. So you had to find break lines in trees. And these fish were sitting and they're eating freshwater shrimp. They were hanging on to the trees. So you go into a spot, you tap the tree, a couple trees, and the fish come around and then hang out for quite a while eating those. So it was pretty cool. And so it's been fluctuating a little bit off and on, but generally a decent bite. But right now, it's taking off. As a note that came out today, I was looking at it. The test netting results showed numbers for all species are up over last year and most considerably higher than traditional averages, said the biologist Todd Caspers. Walleye caught in test nets were 32.4 fish per net this summer. The long-term average is 21 per net. Significantly, the eater-sized walleyes 15 to 20 inches revealed 10.8 per net, nearly double the average of 5.7. I mean, that's impressive.
Wow.
They said a natural reproduction plus fingerling stocking in 2016, 17, 19, 20, and 21, about 900,000 each year, boosted the walleye numbers. White bass per net averaged 11.4 compared to 5.5. The big guys above the 15 inches showed up 3.5 per net compared to a historical average of 0.6 per net. The large class was hatched in 2015. They're now 7 growing years into it, and their numbers will decline over time as they age. Most northern pike were 21 to 34 inches, not hammer handles, so they're pretty big fish.
Nice.
Yellow perch, people love that up there, made great showing. Casper's team recorded 18.3 per net compared to the average of 11.5. So that's...
I mean, they're up like 80%.
Mm-hmm. Big numbers up, which is really kind of cool.
Wow.
Devil's Lake has a unique history of something from nothing. We talked a little bit about it earlier. The record low following the Dust Bowl years, and Lake covered only 11 square miles, to a maximum in 2011. It's now 7 feet lower than the record, and it covers 240 square miles or 145,000 acres. So last fall was a dry year. It dropped the water level quite a bit. But I will say that it just prevents you from going into some of the lakes like Dry Lake, which I've fished before and did pretty well at. But you can launch up there if you want to separately. You don't have to go through the channel. But you're still accessing East Lake, Tiger Bay, East Tiger Bay, Pelican.
Having never fished there before, how difficult is it to locate fish in a body of water? Because, I mean, it's not a typical lake bottom like you would think, with structure and all that kind of thing.
Other than it is structure.
Oh, yeah. But that's man-made structure of buildings.
Well,
and...
I will say this. You're going to look a lot of the same things. You're looking into the trees. You're casting cranks into the trees. You have a lot of rock humps that are out there, whether they're man-made or not. There's a ton of that. A lot of jig and wrap bites going on. You're working on drops, brake lines. They're everywhere, and they really are. You're working in roadbeds. You're fishing roadbeds that you would not believe. Weeds. That's one of the things I think that a lot of walleye people don't, they forget.
Mm-hmm.
The walleye will go in and hang in the weeds. Cabbage, whatever. Cast crankbaits. Cast crankbaits on those edges, those pockets, those areas where they're going to ambush. Throw floats, bobbers. Bobbers up there are incredible. You just throw the float out, you have a jig on it, you let the line out. It's more full contact than you're going to be fishing normally. You're going to, turn that drag up because you don't want that fish to go. You get a 5-pounder and a bobber in the trees, you don't want it to go where it wants to go.
Right.
You need it to go where you want it to go or it's going to be a short-lived fight.
Right.
And that's one of the things that's really kind of fun about it because you've got so many different areas to fish. But the advantage up there is, and this is just a plug to some of my buddies up there. It doesn't take long. Take a guide for a day just to get them familiar with, what's going on, what you should do, how you should rig your stuff. It's worth every penny of it. But, boy, I tell you what, the payoff is absolutely incredible. You get the deal. Bouncers, slow death rigs up there with the curved hook and the spinning crawler, hands down. Absolutely incredible way to catch fish. And you can do it everywhere. Again, floats, small jig head, or casting Rapalas, sinking Rapalas, or countdown Rapalas along the weed edges, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those are absolutely effective methods. Number 5, shad rafts. I'm just simple.
Right.
Simple, simple, simple stuff. And it really it is surprising how effective it really becomes. So I was impressed. It's a good place to go. Check it out. Devil's Lake, North Dakota. My favorite place to go up there is going to be Woodland Resort. They've got a bunch of different places to stay, whether it's a motel, a couple of you going up. You can have first-class accommodations in a big hotel. And they have a marina right there. and they have a restaurant right there and the cleaning facility right there and the bait shop right there. So it's all there.
And information.
And, yep, my buddy Pete Harsh is up there. Go check Pete out. Just give him a shout and say, hey, I want to go with Pete for a day. Shout out to Pete. Treat him right, Pete. If they tell you you're from Fan Outdoors, treat him right. So that's the big thing. And anybody who's a fan of the outdoors that goes up there should be having a good time. But, yeah, tell them Eric sent you, and they'll probably treat you really well. Or not. Who knows? Columbia River. I want to make sure I get to this before we have to bail. Record low numbers of steelhead are returning to the Columbia River. Record low number. They're promoting conservationists and anglers alike to call for a halt to recreational fishing for the sea-run fish. As of this last week, 29,000 steelhead passed the Bonneville Dam since July 1. It's the fewest ever recorded and less than half the average the past 5 years, said Oregon Public Broadcasting. Coalition of Conservation fishing groups sent a letter to Oregon and Washington and Idaho, and they manage that particular fishery, and they want an immediate closure to recreational steelhead fisheries in the Columbia River and the lower Snake River and tributaries. That's not good news.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dire year for steelhead, especially wild steelhead, because there are stocked ones as well. They're trying to protect every eligible spawning fish, and every one of those fish count. And they simply believe that for the ESA-listed steelhead during the worst run, they want to make sure that they are going to have that for future generations. So good luck with that. We'll hope everything goes on. We'll follow that story as well. Hope you guys have a great weekend. And we certainly are as well. And go catch some fish, would you? For Ava, Don, and myself, Eric, we are the Valley Outdoors, and we are out of here. Have a great weekend.